Good morning, everybody. We're going to get started. Thank you all for coming. Remember, there's no TMR next week because of Thanksgiving, which is exciting. I am going to introduce Eric Ennis, who's a TMR member, who has very graciously agreed to not only introduce our panelists, but act as the moderator, so it should be a great session. For those of you who may not know, Onondaga Citizens League's study that's currently going on is about the temperature, I would say, of civic engagement and community engagement in Central New York, and are we doing a great job as a community with civic engagement, or is there things that are lacking? So as part of that study, we've asked these ladies and gentlemen to come today as young leaders in the community to talk about why civic engagement is important to them. And the findings and the narrative that we get today, we will be used as part of the study. So it's very efficient. So Eric Ennis serves as the Economic Development Specialist for the City of Syracuse, Department of Neighborhood and Business Development, assisting with commercial mixed-use project coordination and ongoing city initiatives. He is a Central New York native and serves on the board of directors with local organizations, including as the chair of 40 Below, a volunteer organization for young and or creative professionals. Eric is a Master of Public Administration graduate of the Maxwell School and a graduate of the University at Buffalo with a degree in urban planning and environmental design. Please join me in welcoming Eric Ennis.
All right. Thank you so much, Eileen. Really appreciate it. Good morning, everyone. Great to be here. As Eileen mentioned, I am a TMR member. I never get out to as many of these as I should on a seasonal basis, but such a pleasure to be here with you this morning. So let's get right into it. I'm just going to introduce our panelists that we've got this morning, and then we just have a few questions, and hopefully we'll be able to have a great discussion. I'll go from my left to my right here, I guess. So starting with Andrew Lunetta. So Andrew Lunetta is passionate about combating homelessness and creating community. He has worked and lived with those facing homelessness in Syracuse for the last 8 years. Born in Syracuse, Andrew returned to pursue studies at Lemoyne College in 2008. Since then, he has been active in building relationships with individuals facing homelessness and gaining understanding of the epidemic's root cause through his work at soup kitchens and shelters, and through the establishment of the Pedal to Possibilities program. In 2014, Andrew completed his MPA at the Syracuse University's Maxwell School. We actually graduated together. And founded a Tiny Home for Good, an organization dedicated to providing affordable, safe, and dignified housing to individuals facing homelessness. He is an avid bicycle rider and loves all things design and construction. So, moving on, we have Captain Melissa Forsyth, and she has served with the Air National Guard for over 21 years and has been a member of the 174th Attack Wing since 2002. Captain Forsyth completed an Associate of Applied Science degree in Financial Management from the Community College of the Air Force, a Bachelor of Science degree in Accounting from Kansas State University, and a Master of Business Administration from Columbia College. She has also completed various leadership workshops, including the Dale Carnegie courses and the Center State Corporation for Economic Opportunity Executive Leadership Development Series. Captain Forsyth serves on the United Way's Finance Committee and the Young Leaders United Steering Committee. And then we also have Gus Hernandez. And so Gus grew up in Rockland County, New York, and moved to CNY in 2001 to attend college at SUNY ESF in the Construction Management and Wood Products Engineering program. And he has been here ever since. He started as an intern with the Hanner Hoyt Corporation in 2005 while he was a junior in college, and today serves as the Vice President of Operations. Gus serves as the Vice President of the Salvation Army Young Leaders Council, the President of Echelon, Salvation Army's initiative to recruit the next generation of board members, the Board of Directors of Leadership Greater Syracuse, and he is a member of United Way's Young Leaders United. In his spare time, he enjoys working on hiking the 46 peaks of the Adirondacks. So, yeah, impressive stuff. And so, and last but not least, and you just got here on time, actually, it's perfect. So we have Joanna Rogers, and she is a scholar artist, social entrepreneur, and a community builder who, as one of the co-founders of CNY Roots, creates events and experiences that educate and engage people of color in education and the community. Originally from Newark, New Jersey, she has lived and worked in Indiana, Spain, England, and Costa Rica while pursuing her graduate education. Juana works full-time as the Director of Health Programs at Syracuse Community Connections under the helm of CEO Sharon Owens. Juana's academic pursuits and global experiences have helped her improve the lived experience of people of color, and her work led her into being a part of the Indiana University history in 2016. She and seven of her colleagues were deemed the Great Eight after being recognized as the largest number of black women in the School of Education to complete doctoral degree requirements simultaneously. The Great Eight were selected as Ebony Magazine's Power 100 honorees for being change makers. So can we just give a round of applause and welcome our panelists? All right, so getting into kind of our discussion and a little bit of our information we're going to get from the panel today, I really wanted to open up just going down one at a time, talking a little bit more about your roles right now in the community. And these could be both volunteer-based. We all know all of you are serving in various volunteer roles, and even professionally, and how you've used these opportunities or these titles to really show commitment to your community. So does anyone want to get started? I don't want to put anyone on the spot so early, but do you want to start, Juana? All right, great.
As I dash through the door, good morning, everyone. Juana Rogers, I guess to the question, I do serve various roles. So I'm one of the co-founders of CNY Roots. I work with Victoria Coy, Q's Culture, Vanessa Campbell is in the room, and a number of other young professionals, entrepreneurs, to try to create spaces that could help address some of the challenges that young professionals of diverse backgrounds have here in Central New York with finding the professional as well as personal spaces to thrive. And I think getting involved in that work really stemmed from me being a professional in the city, working with Sharon Owens and the leadership team of Syracuse Community Connections. I'm constantly at tables talking about challenges that our community faces and coming up with solutions or ideas that could lead to strategies and solutions for health disparities, racial disparities, gender disparities on various levels. And then when I walk out of work, it's often like, well, where do I go? you know, to just kind of unwind or find other peers like myself, other young professionals working in this area to get involved. And so at one point in connecting with Vanessa, Victoria of Q's Culture, I kept saying, well, why don't we just create a space? Right? Why don't we, instead of asking the questions, put our heads together and come up with some solutions? And that really came out of recognizing a need. And I think as one of the young leaders, young professionals that's constantly trying to find needs for others, it was also important for me to get involved in something that could help address some of the needs in my personal life. So I think to answer that your question, it grew. My commitment to get involved kind of stemmed from recognizing a need in the community, a personal need, and connecting with other individuals to recognize the importance of those needs.
That's great. Great, yeah, and Gus, same question for you. I mean, you're doing construction management, but how are you using your role in the community to make a difference?
Just thinking, sitting here thinking that it feels like I was shown this train, and I got on this train, and it's just taken me ever since, and it seems to go faster and faster. Really, I've been blessed to be led by example with all the people around me, people that lead by example and put the community first and put others first, sacrifice their time, their funds, and it's contagious. You know, I'm fortunate. You know, I'm employed by the Hayner Hoyt Corporation, the best construction firm in the area, but I also feel like I'm employed by the Salvation Army and Leadership Greater Syracuse and the United Way and at times Tiny Home for Good and all these other entities. You know, yeah, I work a certain portion of the day, but I've got a company that supports me throughout that work day to do things like this, to go give the time, financially when we can, talent when we can, networking when we can. It's promoted. It's not, where are you, where were you? It's what do you need to be able to do this? So I feel extremely lucky as far as that goes. And I got introduced to the Salvation Army as a result of kind of following my mentor and got an opportunity to go through the tour of the facilities with Linda. It wasn't enough time to see everything, but it was enough time to see enough of what they do. And I had personally had no idea. You know, you see the Salvation Army, you think of the kettles, you think of the clothing. And for some, a lot, it probably stops right there. And to really understand the programs and the folks that they're helping. I grew up with a single parent from public assistance. And, there's so many opportunities out there to help folks get in a different position. And, you know, how could you not turn around and put your hand out and lift others up? I've been taught how to do this, quite frankly. And I'm fortunate to be in a position to be part of some of these amazing programs.
Great. Captain Forsyth.
Yeah, so my biggest role right now, as I've progressed through my career, things become more demanding. Your career becomes more demanding. Your family grows. So your family needs, demand your time as well. So I'm with the United Way, Young Leaders United, as Gus is. And what I found working with the United Way is there's really a need for, not only volunteers to volunteer their time, but of course their funds as well, for the agencies in the area. So what I'm trying to focus my time on right now is our local workplace campaign. And I'm a big advocate of those workplace campaigns. And really, that's how I got started with my volunteerism as well. When I was younger, like my first job, the company I was working for had their workplace campaign. And I went home, and I must have mentioned something to my mother. And she said, well, you have to donate. I'm like, I do? And she said, yes, you have to. And so I did. It wasn't probably much. It was, probably $20 or something. But what was really cool is I worked at a bank. The president of the bank pulled me into his office personally and said, wow, I've never had a 16-year-old donate to our campaign before. And he pulled me aside and thanked me. And it's, those things like that, just recognition and that kind of the pat on the back that you're like, wow, I am making a difference with just a few dollars. And that kind of support is what has helped me. I feel like, as Gus mentioned, those leaders that lead by example, even just patting someone on the back for what they're doing is it's a positive reinforcement for individuals to say, hey, well, I really am making a difference and pushing those people forward. And so that was a catalyst for me to just continue not only providing funding, but obviously also volunteering hours as well. And then you volunteer hours and you have people that come up to you and say, hey, thank you. And to me, that means a lot, just feeling, that sense of purpose and having that reinforcement.
That's great. And Andrew, how about yourself?
Sure. I feel like listening to everyone, I think that's what's kind of special about Syracuse, that you can kind of tangibly identify a need. So it's not almost overwhelming. And that's almost what I really appreciate about this place, is that you can identify a need and act on it in a really kind of tangible way. And that's really where A Tiny Home for Good came from, where I had the opportunity to meet a lot of individuals facing homelessness, and I had the opportunity to understand where they were moving to and see that, the apartments and the boarding houses were almost less safe than the shelter. So I was able to identify a need. And if I was in a bigger city, if I was in like New York or Chicago or something like that, I think I would be like, okay, well, I know it needs to be done, but this is, all these structures and all these different things are just too overwhelming. But here in Syracuse, I think that there's this openness and a real kind of ability to make real tangible difference. And when I think about my role as the executive director of A Tiny Home for Good, I really see that as taking advantage of some of these opportunities that are out there in this kind of environment that we all live in. So there's that piece, and then what else I admire a lot of people here who have kind of followed that route to the logical conclusion where it may have been starting an organization and seeing it really go forward, or it may have been starting a business and really trying to make it work here in Syracuse. And I follow the example of a lot of those people, and just thankful that since Syracuse is its size, you can get to know those people very, very well. And I think that's special. I really do.
Great. Well, thank you. That was a great way to get started. So I guess to talk a little bit more, another question that I have is, what made you want to get involved in the first place? So, I mean, I totally resonate with Gus talking about how you almost feel like you're employed by all these organizations that you volunteer with. So what makes you want to work that extra 20 to potentially more hours a week when you're volunteering for all these organizations? And so that might be a twofold question. So can you think about any experiences or your upbringing that kind of made you who you are in terms of getting involved in and doing this work? And then maybe the second part is there a particular person that potentially inspired you or encouraged you to get involved? So, Joanna, we haven't heard from you in a little while, so why don't we start with you again?
I thought about that question last night, and I started this list. And the list kept growing. I was like, wow. But when you think about, like, what made me want to get involved in real ways, and I thought about three different parts of my life. One, my upbringing. I come from a family of entrepreneurs in New Jersey, and so my grandmother was kind of a social entrepreneur, and working where I am at Southwest, that kind of reminds me of her. She ran and operated her own drug rehabilitation center in the basement of her church and ended up on like the governor's council, was involved in DARE and all of these projects to address addiction in the community. And I used to serve hot dogs and coffee and cake at the meetings she would have. And, check people in and do all those types of administrative things on your day off when your mom sends you to grandma's house for like school breaks or whatever. And so I think that is very much centered in the spirit of what I do. My other grandparents were also entrepreneurs, but also very involved in their church and their community and organizing efforts. It wasn't just about establishing a career or providing for your family. It was, I've been brought up in this tradition of giving back, in this village of a philosophy, and I have to bring people with me. You know, that's part of my responsibility in my culture. And so there's that aspect of it. And then years later, I end up in graduate school at Indiana University. And my first day, I met probably five women who were PhDs, administrators at the university that looked like me. And they took me in, and they showed me their ropes. They put me in places to fall on my face, let me make mistakes, but also helped me develop the skills that I have today, and I call them my secret life of PhDs. And so they, the secret life, again, reinforced this notion of you didn't get here by yourself, you won't survive here by yourself, and it's about building relationships and support systems and bringing people with you. And that kind of manifested into the whole Grade 8 story about me and my colleagues. You know, we really formed a sister circle and worked together, again, bringing people with you. And then so I ended up in Syracuse, kind of not knowing anyone. And I think this gets to the second part of your question, what inspired me. My current boss, Sharon Owens, I think if there's an epitome of like a professional that is passionate about the community, but also a professional at the same time. She sets a model, and not just for me, I think for many of us within the agency. And so I think she provided an example of what, you know, my research about community activism, my upbringing about community activism, and now my role as a professional, how you can bring all those things together in a space that's really about serving and bringing others with you. And I guess as far as an experience, a tangible one, I mean, there's many that I've had throughout my experiences over the past few years, but I think the most powerful experiences for me have been ones where I've taken students abroad into different communities, and now I've come back. Just as early as last week, one of them posted about a play about Dominican and African culture that was playing at a local high school and how that reminded them of our time in the Caribbean. And so I see the pieces of my efforts and my work impacting the lives of others in a real way, sometimes with my students, other times it's with our clients or my staff. And I think that just keeps pushing me forward to keep doing more, keep building relationships, finding ways to get involved. That started way young with passing out hot dogs and coffee with grandma, right?
That's great. All right, Gus, how about you? Same question.
Yeah, it's a tough question, you know. It's kind of like asking someone, why do you choose to do good instead of bad?
Yeah.
You know? As far as the memory, the one thing that I haven't actually thought about this in a long time, but I remember when I was less than 10 years old, my neighbor my friend was part of the, you know, had a big brother, the Big Brothers Big Sisters program, and he let me go to the movies with them when his big brother came. You know, and this guy would come and take him to the movies, and he said, "Oh, can I bring my friend?" And I was the friend, and you know, we went several times, and I remember that. You know, there's a lot of stuff I don't remember, and that's a pretty significant memory. I remember how I felt, you know, how that made me feel to be included, and you know, that's significant. You know, there's been a several specific examples in my, you know, more recent experience in serving on some of these boards and associations and programs, and it's the difference between, you know, when you have to be somewhere and someone tells you got to be here, and you're like, all right, I got to do it. It's a responsibility, and you kind of do it because you have to do it. This is different. You know, this is I want to be there. I'm passionate. It's not an inconvenience. You know, it is. It's like my duty. I feel like it's more of a feeling than like an explanation. And when you see this stuff, when you see the benefits of these programs, you know, the Salvation Army and the ARC on Erie Boulevard, and you see these folks changing their life, and to have some type of contribution to that, how could you not? You know, to be part of something bigger than yourself. If you're given the opportunity to do that, I don't know how you can not take advantage of that opportunity. Once you've tasted it, you know, once you've felt it, it is truly contagious. And again, you know, it's those people before me. I see these folks that I've been chasing on a professional level, you know, on a personal level, and they're doing these things. And it's part of the package. You know, I truly feel if it was any one of these things individually, wouldn't necessarily reap the benefits of the entire package and being part of several different things and meeting different people and the networking and who knows what might come from today sitting here, you know, all as a result of volunteering or getting involved in one of these programs. So, I mean, the sky's the limit. We're just scratching the surface here.
That's great. Captain Forsyth.
Sure. So, you know, similar to what they mentioned previously, I also have a memory of when I was very young. My mother dragged me along with her to a meeting for, it was an organization in Kansas, but I would liken it to probably home headquarters here. And you know, I was probably 7 or 8, and I'm just sitting in there just trying to occupy my time. And of course, you know, I'm listening, and I hear what they're saying and what they're talking about they're doing and how it helps people and, you know, how they're helping these people who wouldn't normally be able to buy their own home, you know, helping these people own their own home. And it really resonated with me because I grew up, I was very fortunate to grow up in, you know, middle class family where, you know, that type of thing really wasn't really on my radar. And so to hear that was very eye-opening to me. And it's one of those things that really stuck with me as I grew up. And then, you know, volunteering throughout the community, you know, continues to open your eyes. And then, as I mentioned, starting to volunteer with United Way, you hear about the agencies that they support and the good they're doing in the community. And, you know, I touched on the workplace campaigns, you know, to hear that, you know, the United Way's agencies that they support, you know, they request $7 million in funding annually. And, you know, from the campaigns, they're only able to fund the organizations, you know, at about half that. And so to me, again, very eye-opening. It's like, wow, there's all these great organizations out there that want to do good, but they don't have the funding to do what they really need to do or what they want to do. So that's what keeps me going, is to, you know, try to help, you know, raise those funds to support these types of organizations, so they can do their part in the community and do what they really want to do, which is, you know, help out and, you know, do stuff like what Andrew does over here and, you know, build these tiny homes for people. And you know, and it's frustrating to me that there's all these great people that want to do good, and but they can't, you know, because they have these restrictions. So.
Great. And Andrew, how about yourself? What inspirations led you to where you are today?
Sure. I guess two stories. The first, if I go way back, well before I was even thought about, my father, he was a Catholic priest here in Syracuse. He was a priest for 5 years, realized that he wanted a family, so he left the priesthood. He met my mom because he redid the electrical system at the homeless shelter that she was the director of here in Syracuse. So these thoughts were, obviously the spirit was there from before I was even born. And a real tangible story that I remember, we moved to Boston when I was 7, and there was panhandling here in Syracuse, I know that, but in Boston it was on every corner. And I remember walking down the street and seeing a woman panhandling right probably, 25 yards in front of us. And I asked my mom if we could cross the road because I didn't know what to do. Like, I didn't have money to give her. It was this, like, nervous situation where I was this little 7-year-old and just didn't want to confront this thing. And she took my hand, and we kept walking. And we didn't go across the road. We walked up to her, and she wrapped me around, put me on one side of this woman. She sat on the other, and we just talked. And I don't remember the conversation. I doubt it was anything profound, but it clearly had an impact on me. And I'd like to say that, like, after I was 7, like, when I was, like, 8, 9, and 10, like, I hit the ground running trying to end homelessness. But no, I mean, I loved soccer, and I played soccer all through high school. I thought I was going to go to school to play soccer and all this different stuff. But when all of a sudden, like, I was left with this decision on what I wanted to do, for some reason I felt drawn to the Oxford Street Inn and the shelters here in Syracuse. So that's, like, the early inspiration, which, without a doubt, planted the seed for what I'm doing now. Now, real quick, while working at the shelter, you meet 100 guys every single night who are in different stages of sobriety, different stages of dealing with mental illness, housing, all these crazy situations. And you get to know them really well because you have a lot of time to talk. And one person in particular, his name's Dolphus. I got to know Dolphus really, really well through different programs and through staying at the shelter. And when I decided to start a tiny home for good, he was the one who was always on my mind, thinking, like, is this going to be best for Dolphus? Will this square footage or this direction of this countertop, all this stuff kind of best for Dolphus? And for a year, I tried to get this thing started. I found it at the end of 2014. For all of 2015, I was able to raise the money and then trying to find property, which was really, really hard given a lot of community pushback that surrounds homelessness, and I understand that. However, there were a lot of times when I was like, okay, I have an MPA. I could go to DC and work for some congresswoman or just hop on my bike and go somewhere. But, like, I knew Dolphus really well, and I knew that if I didn't, like, pursue this and see this thing through, he would still be sleeping in the shelter, sleeping on the streets, probably until he died. So it was that relationship that I built with him that was further inspiration and continues to kind of power me through what I'm doing every day.
That's great. All right, thank you for your answers. And so this is going to be your final question as we go down the panel, and then we're going to get into some question and answer for the group. So when I hear the word millennial, and after all, this panel is about engaging young professionals or young people in general to make a difference in your community, I feel like there's always two camps and two views. There's people who see millennials as dynamic and young and agents for change and really want to make a difference. And then I always hear it where people are like, well, they're apathetic and they're entitled, or they just expect everything to come to them. So from your perspective, I'm really interested if you can talk a little bit more about your perception of young people in this type of industry or in this type of field, and talk about either experiences with colleagues or times that you maybe have seen young people step up to the challenge. And the other thing is just, can you talk a little bit more about how that impact in the community is going to be more important now than ever? I think, noticing that boards are now clamoring more than ever to replace members that might be stepping down and looking at young people more than ever as this vital resource. And I think it's not fully convinced everyone in this community yet, but what is your perception on how we fix that? And Joanna, do you want to start again?
Sure.
All right, great.
First, I kind of cringe because I'm like, am I a millennial? Right? Like 82, does that technically count as a millennial? I don't know. And so that's part of the question, right? And before I came here, working in higher ed, I worked with a lot of kids that made me feel much, much, much not a part of the millennial category. And so when we talk about young leaders, though, I think that's very real. Like, who are we talking about? Because the term young connotates like a lot of different groups. There's kids that are coming out of high school now. They're also young leaders. And so we need to be, I think, intentional about who we're looking for and who we're trying to target. And so with CMI Roots, we're talking about that 29 to 40 age range, kind of getting into your professional careers and wanting to get involved, right? And I think when we talk about that group, so if you want to call us millennials, okay, we are unapologetically bringing chairs, as Shirley Chisholm once challenged folks to say, if there isn't room at the table, then just pull up a chair. Because we see, and many of us are energetic about being a part of changing our community, that we are very passionate about our ideas, and sometimes, yes, we don't see all the pieces to them because we're still developing them, but we want an opportunity to voice our opinions. We want an opportunity to sit at the table. If you allow us to, I think we would come onto boards and, bring our understanding of technology, our understanding of social media, our understanding of coalition building, to really address some dynamic issues in this community or any community. And where I think we're on that break of being very mindful and appreciative of who we call our mentors and our leaders, we also are asking them to bring us with them, make room at the table for us, because we're not necessarily going to go away quietly. And that's my perception. And when I look around and I look at individuals in this community who inspire me, many of them are my peers doing dynamic work. Hassan Stevens and Randy White, and individuals that are finding challenges in this community but also providing solutions unapologetically and not taking no for an answer. And so when I think about my perceptions of millennials, I think about those individuals, Osha Keaton, who's over the Greater Hope Syracuse initiative, Ruth Niangad. Like, these individuals are making strides, and they are in this millennial group, and I think there are more of us out there. I think we just need to figure out ways to make sure we are at the table.
Thanks, Gus. What are your thoughts?
I think I remember there was some thing across my desk about the textbook definition or age range or year of millennial. Yeah, I'm just outside of it, by the way.
No one's claiming.
But who cares when you were born or how old you are or whatever. I work hard. I know a lot of other people that work hard. Some are old, some are young. Look at Andrew. What is he? The exact
And nail it.
you know, the opposite of what the textbook definition, the millennials are lazy, they're entitled, they don't want to work for anything, they don't have to pay their dues, you know. In the construction industry, when I started in the field, and I'm the young guy with the college education going to approach an electrician who's been in the field for 30 years, you know, I got to be conscious about that, right? I can't just go in, hey, I need you to go do this. Listen, kid, you know. He's got a wealth of knowledge to teach me. You know, I want to be like a sponge around him. I may be able to teach him how to print his daily report, you know, and that can be that's an even exchange. It's my information that I have to offer is no less or greater than him telling me how we're going to get this job done in the next 4 days. You know, me asking him, valuing his expertise and his experience. So I think it's important for younger folks to be conscious of that in their approach. But you know, the information that each holds is just as valuable. I'm sitting here thinking about Blockbuster. All right, what happened to Blockbuster? They refused to change and they died. You know, it's no different for a not-for-profit, unfortunately. It sounds a little, you know, aggressive maybe, but the fact of the matter is, you know, the presidents of boards today, we were just talking when we walked in here, you know, the president of some real successful local community in 20 years, 15 years, what's that person doing today? You know, how do you get your hands on them or get them engaged now so that when they do come into that position of some weight in the community, they already have the passion there, they want to do it, you're not chasing them, you're not in line with 30 other people trying to say, hey, our organization is the best. And the Salvation Army, the echelon component, this effort to engage younger individuals now, high school, college, young professionals, to say, one, let's get together and have a good time, network. You know, we all work hard. Let's get together for 2 hours, on a weeknight and talk and meet each other and get some engagement and then get a volunteer group and just start this momentum now so that, you know, when the average age of your donors are up here potentially, all of a sudden, you know, $2 a week out of my paycheck, sure. Yeah, I've seen some of the programs, what it can do. You know, it may seem insignificant, but when you tap into an enormous pool with a lot of energy and they see the results of this, you can't ignore it. You know, so I guess in summary, I'd rather not focus on the term or the age range or anything, but just find good, hardworking people that want to give back, tap their resources, and just, you know, exchange. Exchange information, because whatever it's got to do is valuable.
Great. Thank you, Captain Forsyth.
Yeah, I agree with what Gus was saying about, you know, not looking at, you know, what a millennial is. I mean, let's face it, if you look at any generation, you know, you're going to have your so-called lazy people and your motivated people. I mean, it's just human nature that anybody, you know, can go one way or the other. So it seems unfair to peg, a certain generation as one way or the other. But I think it is important for us as leaders and as mentors, out in the community and our business life, taking the time with the younger generations and, you know, making them aware of what different agencies in the area, some of the obstacles there are, especially here in Central New York. We all know that there's, you know, a lot of different obstacles here. And so it's our duty to let them know, hey, these different agencies are trying to help. They're doing this or they're doing that. And even bringing representatives of those agencies into our companies, to have them tell their story, you know, hey, this is what we're doing. This is, you know, how much money it takes to do this, or it only takes, you know, whatever to feed one person, and so on and so forth. And even to bring in people that have been benefited by the different organizations, so they can hear the stories from individuals that have faced difficulties and have been able to overcome them with these agencies' help. So I think really that's our duty, is to motivate them, give them that support, and if nothing else, just open their eyes to what's going on. You know, if you don't really know the obstacles and the difficulties that are out there, it's hard to empathize. But if you see somebody and you can relate to what they're saying, then I think that really makes a big difference. And then also, there's, you know, I've mentioned before, there's so many great agencies in our area. So again, you know, even, you know, just making individuals aware of, hey, you can join Young Leaders United or the Salvation Army's equivalent. And I know, like, the Rotary, you know, there's so many organizations that are out there doing good. And it's a great way to network. So if nothing else, you know, push them that way just to meet people and to network. So I guess, you know, in summary, you know, again, just I think we all have a responsibility to, you know, just provide that awareness and the support. You know, if you see somebody doing good, don't be afraid to give them a pat on the back and say, wow, thank you. Even if, you know, it's just half an hour of service, that half an hour, you know, really meant something to the people that benefited from it. And I think we all know that when we perform community service, it does make us feel good and gives us that sense of purpose. So an extra, you know, thank you certainly can't hurt to keep everyone motivated to keep going and do what they can in the community.
Great. All right, and Andrew?
Sure. Cognizant that I probably fit into that millennial role or something like that, I think that I'm no different than like the generation before me, where I'm looking for community, I'm looking for acknowledgement, and I think a lot of my peers who are in that same age bracket end up finding that community based on like their Facebook friends, or end up finding that acknowledgement based on their likes on social media. And I think that that's where that really kind of dangerous, where that label is tossed on to people, because they're finding those very human things that we're all looking for in ways that might not be as human as we might think. Some of the most exciting times that I have as the executive director of A Tiny Home for Good is when we have big groups of volunteers from colleges or from whatever churches who are young and excited and all of a sudden doing something that's very different from what they're typically used to. And while the product, the work that actually comes from that might not be as high quality as if we had like professional carpenters out there doing the work, I recognize that they're getting something out of that in a way that they certainly wouldn't if they were sitting at home, or if they were even just like writing fundraising letters for me. You know, they're together with a very different group of people. They're working with individuals facing homelessness to accomplish a project. And at the end of the day, they've built this community. And I'm not entirely sure how many of those, you know, probably the majority are then going back home and pursuing the same stuff. But I'm positive that there have been a handful who have decided, hey, I really kind of like this work. And it might not be that I'm passionate about ending homelessness, but perhaps like the only way for me to learn more about how to better take care of animals is to go down to a shelter and get hands-on there. Or the only way for me to share music is to go to the Southwest Community Center and offer music classes there. And I think offering those opportunities for people to come, young people to come, get hands-on, like really hands-on and eyes-on other people, all of a sudden there's this community that's built, and that's checking off a box that I think we're all looking for, millennials included.
Absolutely. All right, well, thank you. And I will admit as well, I don't know what technically defines a millennial or what year the internet says that
it just
started.
I just looked it up. It's ages 18 to 34. Not that we want to pigeonhole in here. And there's 75.4 million millennials in the country, and you have surpassed the baby boomer generation.
Great.
That's what I just Googled. Who has a question?
Thank you, guys. This was really, really valuable and touched home to me in a lot of ways. I have kids in this millennial age group, and I get particularly impatient on their behalf when I hear people talk about this cohort being lazy or not caring, because I see it every single day in our own work and with my colleague and everyone else in my own family. I just want to say two things really quick. One is, we actually just got back from a conference where there was some research presented from the Indiana University School of Philanthropy. I forget the actual name of it. Yes. And they basically talked about next gen in terms of donors and in terms of their community impact. And it's really fascinating. I think the guy's name was Michael Moody. He wrote it. But he basically said the same statistics you just said about the second large, and that's larger than the baby boomers. But also, it's a different way of working in community than my age group and older were used to. And it's different. It doesn't mean it's worse or better. And it is, everything you guys have said has testified to this, and that is that millennials prefer to go into one particular, they want to dive into an area to have their impact. They don't necessarily want to be in, which is fine too, nine or six different, I'm on nine different boards, and one's arts and one's animal welfare and one's this. It's really concentrating. So I think you guys are a great testament to that fact. And the other last thing is just a pitch for the Leadership Greater Syracuse Gifford Foundation Community Foundation program called Nourishing Tomorrow's Leaders, which starts next spring, and it helps bring you guys forward.
I'm giving you a solo standing ovation because I'm so inspired. And I wish I could just bottle up your motivation and your enthusiasm and sprinkle it like fairy dust over our city, because my question is about not the, necessarily the self-centered or motivated to succeed millennials, but this whole other cohort. I have three kids that we adopted from the South Side, and they struggled early on. They lived with us for 10 years. They're now, I suppose, in the millennial category. And they're struggling into adulthood, and they and their friends seem to be on a different planet from you guys. They don't think about volunteering for anything. They're overwhelmed with their own needs and their own, they can't get out of their own way sometimes. And I was driving with my 23-year-old daughter, and we were talking about the election and what an exciting election it was. She said, of course, she didn't vote. She's not registered. I'm disappointed. We modeled this behavior over all these years. Mm-hmm. Why didn't you vote? It doesn't affect me. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't get through. Do you have anything that you could say to these people, or is it sort of like you have the gene of empathy? and this cohort will never have it. Or do you have something to say to them?
I'll say this. I think there are different times in our lives where the principles and the morals that our parents or our grandparents instilled in us, we completely ignore or don't necessarily have the capacity to pay attention to. And then something changes. A pivotal moment happens and a shift occurs and those things become more relevant. And so hold on, don't give up. I think that's one of the other things. But I think in talking with many of my peers, and I think I'm not from here, but I think this happens everywhere. I think sometimes as young people, we have to see ourselves in the work. And how that happens, I think it happens for different people. I think it happens at different moments, but we gotta find the moment or the end where we see ourselves in the work that needs to be done or the work that is happening. And how that happens, sometimes you meet a teacher coming through high school or elementary school where it's planted very early on. My eighth grade teacher told me I was gonna be a teacher. I totally didn't believe her. But you know, that's the road that was laid. And so finding those individuals that can help or mentor, but I think that speaks from my experience where I've been in those spaces. There's a lot of folks, even my friends, that haven't been in those spaces, that aren't as engaged. And so I try to, when we have conversations, try to connect what's happening to their role in it. and similar to the movie like The Matrix, right? There's the people that are kind of like in the system, those that are gonna buck it, and those that are trying to live between both worlds. And some folks get there sooner than others, and some others take a little bit longer time. I will say at 23, I wasn't thinking about how the election impacted my life either. I probably got more involved this time around because I understood how the trickle-down politics. Whereas in my mid-20s, I just didn't get it. When the recession hit, the one thing that I was able to connect it to was the funds drying up in higher education, right? Diversity pots of money dried up. Because that turned a light bulb on, but it wasn't until probably the last 3 years being engaged in work for a very vulnerable population that I'm understanding, this is why my mother kept talking about health insurance. I never got it. I was just like, wow, we go to the dentist almost every month. I don't get it. But when now I'm working for people that don't have it, I'm like, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, one quick thing I just thought of. I remember, you know, like my mother would say to me all the time, you'll understand when you get older. You know, you'll understand when you get older. You know, she always wanted the dishes out of the sink immediately after they were in there. And I was like, why do you got to do them right now? Why do you got to do them right now? And then when you get your own house and you have your own kitchen and your own dishes, you understand. You can talk till you're blue in the face, but until personally you have that experience for yourself, till personally taxes affect you personally, till personally funding for a program that you've been involved with goes away and you want to make a change. Unfortunately, until that happens in some aspect, I don't know that, you know, like it was said, I mean, even to some extent right now, there are certain politics that I have less interest in because it doesn't necessarily affect my day-to-day life. As time goes on and get more responsible and start to feel the more, you know, responsibility as a part of the whole, that changes as time goes on. But you know, you can tell someone to do something till you're blue in the face, but until it impacts them personally, you know, even if you tell them to do it and they do it because you told them to, it's not sustainable.
Yeah.
Probably not the
I'm also a volunteer with the OCL study that Eileen mentioned. We're trying to figure out how to better engage people across our community. So in the spirit, Andrew, of just get it done, and we really can do things in Syracuse. We can get things done.
Yeah.
We learned we need to go to where people are. So how do we... How can we make it easy for nonprofits and wherever there's an opportunity for service to get to you and others like you? So where are you? What are the entry points? I know we have leadership development programs, but I think that those can be self-selected. So how do we reach you guys? Where are you?
No. December 14th, CNY Roots is having an event. And your question is important because this is why CNY Roots and Q's culture exists, because young professionals of all backgrounds, right? It was like when we walk out of work, where do we go? Armory Square is great when SU is not in session, right? Because we don't really want to hang out with the college kids, right? And so when we look beyond that space, where is it that we can go, you know, like you said, you know, after work, you know, to network and socialize? We're not really going to show up at 8 o'clock in the morning, unless maybe we're on a panel. And so we miss out on some of these conversations. And so Q's Culture, CNY Roots, we're like, we got to create a space. We had the brunch back October 28th, the Orange Soul Brunch. And at first we were like, okay, who's gonna come? How's it gonna happen? Some of you may have gotten emails from Victoria or I asking you, do you wanna sponsor some of your employees? Because we don't really have a space to gather. So it's not like you're really missing us. We go, for me and many of my peers, we go to work and we go home. There isn't that in-between space, and so that's what CNY Roots is sort of kind of the gap we're trying to fill. Because one, if we don't gather, then it's hard for us to get involved, right? It's hard for us to know what opportunities exist because we're not often in the room. And so December 14th, you may want to put that on your calendar because that'll be our next event where we're hoping to bring a larger, diverse young professionals group and try to have more, to network and have some more of these conversations and learn about some more of these opportunities.
Yeah, and they can literally go online and find this as well, too. I mean, they could, you know, just simply Google local leader, young leader type groups within Central New York. I know, like Young Leaders United, and then, you know, there's multiple ones. So literally just Googling. And then also volunteercny.org is a great website. You know, if you just want to do an activity and, you know, if you're trying to get your kids involved, you know, go on there, find something that seems like it might be appropriate to bring your kids along and, you know, just make a day of it. You know, one thing that hit home for me was I went and, you know, volunteered to serve it for Thanksgiving dinner. And, you know, I was able to go help out in the morning, still get home in the afternoon or evening for our Thanksgiving dinner. And you can help out. And again, you know, with the younger generations, if they can see it and if they can feel it, and I think that will, you know, help bring them in. And then I think it was Gus that mentioned how community service, you know, once you do it, it's, did you say addicting?
Contagious.
Contagious. It really is contagious. So if you can get them out there just for one event, you know, maybe you can, you know, get them into that contagious mode, and then they can go out and find opportunities on their own or with their friends.
Good morning. I've been involved with local organizations for probably 4 decades now. And in every organization that I've been involved with, including Thursday Morning Roundtable, every year the same issue comes up. How can we attract younger people? And even though we've had some success in bringing younger people in, they don't seem to stay. It's different at Thursday Morning Roundtable of the way it's set up. However, even here, they don't last. At the board level, I get the fact that sometimes sitting at meetings every month can get boring. I get bored with some of the meetings, but that's also where the policy is set. Mm-hmm. And it's really important. Gus alluded to the fact that organizations in this community, some of them need to change, and I agree with that completely. And I think in order for that to happen, we need to bring in young people with different eyes, with different experiences, and different visions. So could you give us some thoughts on this issue?
Yeah, one of the Echelon program in Salvation Army that's kind of just getting off the ground here in Syracuse, we had the opportunity to go to the National Convention, International Convention for Salvation Army, and understand this initiative that was going on, specifically to engage, you know, younger people. And, you know, quite frankly, the venue to start with is not this. You know, it is after work, potentially, meeting. We've done things. We went to a Chief game as a group. Mm-hmm. We're going to an SU game this month. We're going to go to Sky Zone, a trampoline park. You know, these things that may sound crazy, but that's the reality of what it takes to get the engagement. You know, so we started doing these things. We went to a movie tavern. We rented a movie theater out. We saw the premiere of a movie all together, introduced the program, had on the big screen, had some coming attractions of what we do and how we do it. And, you know, we've got, we started in April. We have 55 paying members right now, from 22 to less than 40. And so you have this pool. Now, not to say that all of those folks will end up eventually attending something a little more formal like this or formally being on a board, but that's the starting pool. And then maybe some of those will expose themselves and want to be on that kind of junior board. And then maybe a couple of those will expose themselves. So it's that type of thing. But quite frankly, we're starting with more social, loose interaction, mm-hmm. slowly engaging, volunteering, and then taking it from there.
And I'll just add, and I think it'll lead to what Gus is saying, bringing young leaders of any demographic to the table is one thing, but willing to listen to their ideas, willing to consider them and actually act on some of the things that they're saying, I think is two different things. some of the things that we hear from individuals is like, you know, we go to the meetings, but no one really recognizes us. Or if we have an idea, there's a million reasons as to why it's always existed this way. It's always existed this way. And that is a turnoff for a lot of young leaders. There's some of us that are kind of hard-headed and loud, like myself probably, and we'll say, okay, I'll challenge that. But there are many that don't have that personality, and so they're a little bit more timid or just don't feel comfortable bucking the system in that way. And so when we talk about, like, you know, we know this is a problem, but how can we get it? You got to be willing to change. You got to be willing to listen to what they're saying and give them a central role in maybe creating that change.
Okay, we are out of time, and I want to thank you so much to our panelists and to Eric.